You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Thursday, July 9, 2026. Runaway spike in the D4 renewable identification number price about more than a higher mandate. Published by George Hoekstra. The price of the D4 Renewable Identification Number, or RIN, has increased 130% so far in 26. The jump in the price was a response to both a 70% increase in the minimum biobased diesel volume mandate set by the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, for 2026 and a higher price premium for soybean oil relative to ULSD, or ultra-low sulfur diesel. In today's RBN blog, we analyze the additional factors at play in the increase, from both theoretical and practical standpoints. Let's start with a bit of background about how the mandates for renewable fuels work. As we noted in Something's Gotta Give, the Federal Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS, requires certain minimum volumes of biofuels to be blended into fuel sold in the U.S. The required minimum, known as the Renewable Volume Obligation, or RVO, is determined each year by the EPA. A RIN is the regulatory mechanism for tracking the production and blending of renewable fuels and also allows refiners and importers to prove they've met their RVO mandates. To see the importance of the RIN system, let's consider a biobased diesel producer who buys used cooking oil, a common feedstock for biobased diesel production, for $6 per gal, processes it into biobased diesel, then sells it for $3 per gal to be blended with refined petroleum diesel for eventual sale as diesel fuel to truckers. With a $6 per gal feedstock cost and $3 per gal product value, the producer's profit margin is -$3 per gal. Without a subsidy, production and sales would be zero. The RIN credit is the primary instrument that provides that subsidy. To see how this works, think of the RIN as having three functions. First, it is a subsidy. A gallon of biobased diesel comes with an embedded virtual coupon, that's the RIN, whose purpose is to stimulate increased sales by reducing its price to a level that makes it competitive as a substitute for petroleum-based diesel. Second, the D4 RIN functions like a tax on petroleum diesel and gasoline. The dollar value of the tax varies. The higher the RIN price, the higher the pseudo-tax. This raises the question of whether the RIN tax, like a sales tax, passes through the supply chain from the refiner or importer to downstream biofuel blenders, distributors, retailers, and consumers. For more on that important question, see our Misunderstanding blog series. The third function of the D4 RIN is to ensure the volume of biobased diesel delivered to the U.S. market is at least the minimum EPA-mandated volume. A higher mandate requires a higher subsidy to draw more volume into the system. The RIN price adjusts to draw in precisely the volume prescribed by the control system. So, the D4 RIN is a subsidy funded by a tax just big enough to ensure delivery of the prescribed volume of biobased diesel. The theoretical D4 RIN price is the single value that works for all three functions we just noted. Let's go a level deeper on how this works. The biobased diesel supplier's subsidy comes in two forms, a non-RIN component and the RIN component. The non-RIN component includes various federal and state subsidies that together fill part of the biobased diesel supplier's margin gap. The RIN price, by design, adjusts to fill the remainder. The RIN price, in theory, is the subsidy value that causes the marginal, highest cost producer in the market to just break even when supplying the last prescribed gallon of biobased diesel. When the EPA increased the 2026 minimum mandatory volume of biobased diesel by 70% to 6 billion gallons per year, the RIN price increased, which increased the RIN tax, which funded a higher subsidy, which enabled higher cost supply to profitably enter the market. What market force triggered the RIN price increase? As we noted in part one of this mini-series, it was increased bidding for D4 RINs by obligated petroleum refiners and importers in response to their need for more RINs to fulfill their 70% higher RIN tax obligations. That increase was undoubtedly the biggest single factor driving this year's D4 RIN price run-up, but there were other factors too. As we just stated, the RIN price depends heavily on the prices of biobased diesel feedstocks and diesel fuel, which directly affect production economics and are volatile, especially this year with the Iran war and changing U.S. tariff policies. That volatility was a factor. Another factor was the EPA's reallocation of small refiner exemptions, or SREs, which had waived previous year's obligations for some refiners but, under new EPA rules, have now been converted into new obligations to be satisfied by others in 2026 and later years. This reallocation increased the prescribed volume of necessary biobased diesel supply, which further worked to increase the RIN price. The non-RIN component of renewable fuel subsidies also changed this year, which, as we just stated, is another factor affecting the RIN price. The biggest was the expiration of the $1 per gal biodiesel blender's tax credit and its replacement by the 45Z clean fuel production credit, which gives tax credits to biofuel producers based on the carbon intensity, or CI, of the feedstock used. See part 1 of this miniseries for more on that. That also worked in the direction of increasing the D4 RIN price in 2026. The tax subsidy mandate triplet is the first key concept for understanding RIN pricing. But, going one step further, it is helpful to also recognize that, in addition to being a subsidy, a tax, and a mandate, the D4 RIN is also a financial asset. Like other financial assets, you can be long a RIN, meaning you own it, or you can be short, meaning you owe it. When a fuel supplier blends a gallon of biofuel, the embedded virtual RIN coupon is released. It carries value as a compliance credit and is tradable in a secondary market. A supplier who has blended more than its obligated volume of biofuel can sell surplus detached RINs to another supplier who has blended less than its obligated volume and wants to buy RINs to meet its compliance quota. The trading market provides flexibility for participants to reduce their cost of compliance by effectively borrowing, or lending, biofuel production capacity, which generally works to reduce RIN prices and the industry's aggregate cost of compliance. In another nuance, RINs are differentiated by their vintage, meaning the year they were generated. RINs of this year's vintage can be used, retired, by a refiner or importer to fulfill compliance obligations incurred in this year's compliance period or, within limits, they can be banked and carried forward for use in fulfilling next year's obligation. At least 80% of the compliance burden must be met by current year RINs, with up to 20% met by prior year RINs. You can't use RINs that are older than the prior year. These banking and borrowing features provide flexibility to further minimize compliance costs by optimizing RIN use across compliance periods. The changing status of the RIN bank is another factor affecting the supply and price of the RIN. So far in 2026, the RIN bank has been getting drained as increased RIN demand has outpaced the growth of RIN supply. Like commodity traders, RIN enthusiasts watch the RIN bank inventory closely for clues on whether and when a potential D4 RIN price runaway might become reality, and they respond accordingly. Economic theory says that, with tradable RIN credits in competitive markets, rational market participants will blend renewables themselves to the extent their incremental cost of compliance is below the credit price, and buy credits to the extent their incremental cost of compliance exceeds the credit price. Guidelines like this help drive the RIN market price toward a theoretical equilibrium value where the marginal, highest cost, biofuel supplier in the market breaks even, and the compliance cost for the industry is minimized. The RIN is one of many complex environmental credits that incentivize biofuel blending, and there are more nuances. Here's the final one for today. There is not just one RIN system, there are four, one for each of the four categories of renewable fuel, and they are interconnected. This important complexity can cause discontinuous changes in RIN prices. See, the Big Bang Theory and Baby the RINs must fall for more. For today's purpose, a pertinent fact is that the D4 RIN, which ranks high in the nested hierarchy, competes with its siblings, the D3, D5, and D6 RINs, to fill volume obligations in lower nested categories. The D4 RIN is considered a higher value RIN because it can be used to satisfy D5 and D6 obligations, but not D3. To the extent it wins that competition, the volume of bio-based diesel produced, and the D4 RIN price, will be higher. In recent years, the D4 RIN has consistently won extra volume that way, due to the lack of consumer acceptance of higher ethanol gasoline blends. Ethanol generates D6 RINs, thanks to the RIN's nested structure. That situation could change again in the future if E15 or E85 usage picks up, with consequences that will surprise the market, as it has in the past. Astute readers may have noticed a family resemblance between a RIN and an option. Both are financial instruments that come with different expiration dates, depend on volatile commodity prices, and never carry a negative value. That resemblance is real. As a financial instrument, a RIN fits exactly the definition of an option, and its theoretical value is defined by the same formulas used to price other options. This is another nuance with important implications for the behavior of RIN prices. Where will the D4 RIN go from here in 2026? The first half of 2026 was dominated by bullish sentiment. But as always, the market contains bulls and bears. Today's blog focused on the economics and mechanics of RIN pricing, not on the forecast. Predicting the next move will be left to the real traders. Runaway was written by Del Shannon and Max Crook, and appears as the sixth song on side one of Shannon's 1961 debut studio album, Runaway with Del Shannon. Singer-slash-guitarist Charles Westover and his keyboardist, Max Crook, were playing together in a band featured at the Hi-Lo Club in Battle Creek, Michigan, called Charlie Johnson and the Big Little Show Band. Ann Arbor DJ Ollie McLaughlin helped them secure a record deal with Big Top Records in New York in 1960. Westover changed his name to Del Shannon, and Crook, who had invented a new electronic keyboard he called a Musitron, changed his name to Maximilian Crook. The recording of Runaway took place at Bell Sound in New York City in January 1961 and features Crook soloing on his Musitron keyboard. Released as a single in February 1961, it went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart and has been certified gold by the Recording Industry Association of America. Personnel on the recording were Del Shannon, vocals, Max Crook, Musitron solo, Mo Wexler, piano, Al Caiola, Al Casamenti, Bucky Pizzarelli, guitars, Milt Hinton bass, Joe Marshall, drums, and Bill Ramall, baritone sax. Producer Harry Balk sped up the recording a half step before it was pressed to vinyl. As a side note, Crook's Musitron was also used on Shannon's Hats Off to Larry and So Long Baby. It remained in Crook's possession until he died in Deming, New Mexico, in July 2020 at 83. The Musitron remains with Crook's family. The album, Runaway with Del Shannon, was recorded in January 1961 at Bell Sound in New York City and was produced by Harry Balk. Released on Big Top Records in June 1961, it went to number 32 on the Billboard 200 Albums chart. The album features the first recording of the Doc Pomus and Mort Schumann song, Marie's the Name, Latest Flame, made popular by Elvis Presley. One single, the number one hit Runaway, was released from the LP. Del Shannon, Charles Wheaton Westover, was an American singer, songwriter, and musician best known for his signature song and number one hit single, Runaway. He released 15 studio albums, 2 live albums, 5 compilation albums, and 39 singles. He later worked with Dave Edmonds, and Tom Petty produced his 1982 studio album, Drop Down and Get Me. Shannon died at his home in Santa Clarita, California, in February 1990 at 55. He was posthumously inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1999.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.